Welcome to the Herbs with Rosalie podcast, a show exploring how herbs heal as medicine, as food, and through nature connection. I'm your host, Rosalie de la Forêt. I'm an herbalist teacher and the best-selling author of the books Alchemy of Herbs and Wild Remedies. I created this podcast to share trusted herbal wisdom so that you can get the best results when relying on herbs for your health. I love offering up practical knowledge to help you dive deeper into the world of medicinal plants and seasonal living. My goal is that you'll walk away from each episode feeling inspired to start working with herbs in your everyday life. Each episode of the podcast is available on my Herbs with Rosalie YouTube channel, as well as your favorite podcast app. Transcripts and recipes for each episode can be found at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com. To get the latest news as well as fun bonuses, be sure to sign up for my weekly herbal newsletter. Okay, grab your cup of tea. Let's dive in. Welcome back. This episode is a bit of a part two to last week's episode on three herbs for building resilience. And like last week, I'm in conversation with Rebecca Altman, who happens to be the person I text somewhere around 50 times a day, and who knows me probably better than I know myself. In other words, this is my bestie. In this episode, we're diving deeper into one of our favorite herbs for resilience, Tulsi, also known as holy basil. But this discussion isn't simply a list of benefits of what Tulsi can do for you. We do go over that a little bit, but we're also showing you how much fun you can have with creatively welcoming Tulsi into your life. And yes, we do share some delectable Tulsi recipes and ideas with you. We also share our approach to building resilience, which includes not only forming relationships with herbs like Tulsi, but also transforming your relationship to stress. Our four-month online course dives even deeper into these concepts and is perfect for you if you're tired of feeling chronic stress and daily overwhelm and you're ready to live a life with more ease and spaciousness. You can visit the link in the show notes for more information about building resilience as well as to sign up. Enrollment for 2024 ends April 10th. Okay, on to the show. Well, welcome back to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rosalie, for having me.
Yeah, twice in a row, first time for a guest, but yeah, who better to do it than with my bestie? And I'm super excited about, we did a lot of brainstorming for this, and then we came up with the idea, it was so obvious. We're going to talk about one of our favorite herbs, Tulsi, and we're going to talk about creative ways that you get to work with Tulsi so it's not just another thing on your to-do list, because we want to avoid that. And of course, we're going to be talking about building resilience, our course, but also just things you can do today in terms of working with herbs and stress. All right, Bex, let's dive in.
Yes. Okay. One of the main reasons I think that you and I wanted to talk about this is that we both love creating interesting recipes with herbs. And one of the things that I realized while we were discussing building resilience, our course, was how we have both made taking herbs daily a part of our daily lives in a really beautiful way, because we do. It's like, I remember when I was visiting you last year and when you put me to work picking up pine cones in your garden for hours.
That builds resilience.
It did. I arrive and she hands me a rake. And then we went inside afterwards and had my new favorite summer drink, which was your hawthorn shrub. Mm. And then later that day we had dandelion hummus. And like just for any of you out there who are, you know, like, oh, you know, Rosalie talks about this stuff, but is this actually her life? Yes, this is actually her life. And it was just, it's such a normal part of your life. And then when people come to my house and I've got, you know, my Shatavari ghee going or herbs infused in honey, and it's just how we both do things. And so it's just a part of our daily life. So it's never, or I mean, sometimes especially for me, I think there's definitely times when you wake up to messages where I've decided I'm going to start a new routine and it usually lasts about 3 days. But for the most part, we maintain our herbal habit and our other healthy habits because they're just regular parts of our lives. And when I think about building resilience, the topic, and building resilience, the course, things that are actually effective is when the things that you want to do aren't actually just items on your to-do list, because we're all busy and we're all stressed and we all have so much going on. And I don't know anyone who is like, oh yeah, I have the time and bandwidth to start something new that's going to be really challenging big. And take, yeah. Nobody actually has that. And I think many of us have ideas of things that we would like to do, but the reasons that we want to do them is for the end effect. Like, we want to start taking herbs every day because we want to feel the effects of the herbs in our lives. We want to start meditating every day, not just because, you know, people say meditating is good, but because of the effect on your nervous system and on your brain and on your outlook. And when we want resilience, which is simply just having more capacity and feeling more effortlessness and ease in your life, it feels almost counterintuitive to go about that by saying, okay, I'm going to become more resilient by waking up at 6 a.m. and meditating for 15 minutes. And then after that, I'm going to have a brisk cold shower. And then after that, I'm going to eat a very, very healthy breakfast. And then, I mean, it sounds exhausting. I think to force anything like that is exhausting. And I can't see with anyone who I see trying it that way, I don't actually see it happening and succeeding long term. Whereas the thing that does actually help long term is changing your relationship to changing the relationship to the things in your life that feel overwhelming and or stressful, but also changing the relationship to the habits and practices that you want to establish. And I think of them sort of like almost like a computer program that's running in your brain. Like, your thoughts and habits are like a computer program, and it's just running constantly in the background. And what most people, I think, try to do is to just like simultaneously run a new computer program without realizing or addressing the fact that there's another one running. And I think that what we do, can I say brilliantly? Am I allowed?
I'll allow it.
Okay, because I think that what we do so brilliantly is we just go in and we're rewriting the code of the computer program to make it a new computer program that makes life, that changes the relationship to the stressors and changes the relationships to the things that we want to do that make life feel more spacious, mm-hmm. and make all of these new practices feel so much more effortless. And without addressing that underlying computer program, I just don't see how it can feel effortless to try and change. Mm-hmm. It's like people try to change as a form of self-punishment or something, but that's not actually sustainable long term. Right. And what you and I think one of the reasons that you and I have been friends for so long is that we are both deeply practical in our own ways, and we're like, we want to do things that actually have an effect and that actually work,
and led by joy. Just speaking to that punishment aspect, like, we're very much led by joy and feeling wonderful, you know. What all of this like brings up for me too is that, you know, the herbal industry is now billions of dollars, right? Since the 90s, it's just like exploded. It's billions of dollars, but like 99% of that industry, I'm making that number up, but 99% is these nutraceuticals now, where herbs are massively grown in monocultures or massively wild harvested, processed in factories, extracted, you know, like not whole herbs, but then we're extracting it and then putting it into it. And then they're being sold as these like kind of kitchen sink formulas or just whatever. So it's like, and then you go to the store and you buy a bottle of whatever, whether it's liquid or tablet or whatever, but you buy the bottle of the thing that is usually atrociously expensive. And then you're taking that like by the handful or whatever. And then that's like supposed to change everything. Like, that's like the That's the nutraceutical approach. And I'm not going to say there's no benefit there. Like, we know that swallowing ashwagandha every day is going to have some benefit for you. So I'm not saying no benefit there, but that's not like the magic and beauty and art of herbalism. This other thing just popped into my head randomly, Bex, that I remember one time I was made fun of at an herbal conference because I had just published a recipe on chickweed sandwiches. And the person was like, for them, that wasn't like a serious enough herbalist, like to make a chickweed grill. It was a chickweed grilled cheese sandwich, right? And they were like,
that sounds delicious.
Yeah. And they were like, I would never want to be that herbalist. It's like trying to teach people how to make chickweed grilled cheese sandwiches. And I felt like I was pretty young herbalist at the time. I felt kind of bad about that, but I've thought about it over the years and I haven't thought about it in a while, but it does come down to that relationship. Like, we're creating a different way of being when we become this type of herbalist, where we're creating those relationships. I'm not saying everybody has to love chickweed grilled cheese sandwiches, but the idea is that we're not just like putting this band-aid approach of swallowing a bunch of capsules and thinking like that's going to change everything for us. Like, there is something that happens when you spend time with the plants, when you form that relationship with the plants, that goes beyond like, oh, I took this and now it changed my physiology.
100%. I mean, just thinking about why I became a herbalist, it was picturing the relationship. It was picturing the feeling of walking outside, having all of my plant friends out there and walking through the desert or walking through the mountains and being like, hey, friend, hey, friend, hey, friend. And then the feeling of seeing, you know, a friend calling me and being like, I've got this thing. And me being like, back in an hour and going for a walk and be like, hey, friend, can you help my other friend? Mm. And that was what I wanted. It was, you know, it was that. And then having the rows of jars, but as a reflection of the relationship, not just because I am a deeply covetous person. Yes, relationship. And none of that in my imagination was ever like, oh, I want to be able to go to the store and buy a bottle of the thing I want, which is still, I mean, it's obviously, it's still very effective, still very useful. When people call me with an issue, I'll be like, go to the store and get this. But for me personally, the thing I wanted was that relationship. And I think that's, it is something, thinking about that relationship as being a beautiful and effortless expression of who we are, as opposed to something that we have to force and practice in order to be a certain way or look a certain way, which sounds exhausting and like a whole lot of work that doesn't really seem necessary, when I think for those of us who are called to this, it really just is who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I guess I would want to just bring up, there's so many different ways to form that relationship. Like, for example, I take hawthorn capsules almost every day. And then I also have hawthorn shrub, and I also spend time with the plant. Like, there's no like wrong way. Like, I know neither of us want to make anyone sound like it's wrong.
Oh, no. I take capsules every day as well.
So the only thing I would want to make wrong is just like this, if somebody believed that like, oh, I'm going to go take a handful of capsules I bought at the store every day and not change anything, not change my relationship, not change my perception. And I'm just going to 100% rely on these things that are like in my hand to change everything for me. I'm going to like just posit that that is not going to work out. That's kind of, you know, it's not even that it's wrong. It's just like, I don't think that's going to bring people the results that they want.
Especially when it comes to something as big as this topic that we're talking about, which is the topic of overwhelm and stress and burnout, is not just a physiological issue. It is a relational issue. It's about the relationship between self and outside world, the relationship that we have with ourselves and the ways that we perceive ourselves and the ways that we perceive time, the way that we perceive capacity. Like, all of these things are so interconnected that I don't see a way to change this massive, sprawling, interconnected pattern without addressing multiple aspects of it at the same time.
Yeah, which is kind of what we brilliantly do in building resilience. It's looking at changing the relationship to building relationships with plants and then changing the relationship to stress and overwhelm from a really grounded, centered place. I'm wondering if we should dive into Tulsi a little bit and talk about the many ways we love Tulsi. And I'm really excited to talk about some creative ways to work with Tulsi too. So yeah, Tulsi is interesting. It originally comes from India, Africa. There's several different varieties. It's often called Tulsi, but also often called holy basil. And then of course there's like regular basil. And one of the most common questions I get is, does regular basil, like your culinary basil, work the same as Tulsi or holy basil? I have heard herbalists say yes. I'm not convinced. I think Tulsi is something extra special. It tastes different, smells different, looks different, but that's just my opinion on that. And there are different varieties of Tulsi. There's like four main varieties, and there's some debate about whether or not these are used somewhat interchangeably. And so I'll leave that up to people to debate more. But I say, like, find your favorite Tulsi. Find the Tulsi you can find. Don't be too particular, worried about, like, getting the specific thing, and start working with Tulsi. But why would you want to do that? It's such an amazing adaptogen. And so that adaptogen word, meaning that it helps you soothe the negative effects of stress in kind of this overarching way. So it often has non-specific modes of action. And Tulsi is one of those plants that seemingly does everything.
Everything.
And it's a cool plant that we can grow too, because so many of the adaptogens out there are roots that take years to grow, or that might be really hard to grow. So that might be difficult, but basils are fairly simple to grow. They're aerial parts. We're using the leaves and the flowers. So that's kind of a fun thing about Tulsi too, is it's just very approachable in that we can grow it. Or you can buy it, but yeah, it's a very sustainably grown plant, so that's nice. And let's talk about ways that it helps support us. I think, you know, for me, Bex, like one of the biggest things, because I'm kind of obsessed with inflammation and how inflammation affects people with chronic disease. And then it has this, like, there's a loop with chronic inflammation and chronic stress. They feed each other. It's like chronic stress creates inflammation, and then inflammation in the body creates stress. And so it's like this, like, feedback loop that they can just build and build and build. And Tulsi is really wonderful at modulating inflammation. And it's also wonderful at decreasing stress as a relaxing nervine in the body. So it's like we have these things that feed upon each other in a negative way. And Tulsi like helps recorrect that cycle in a really positive way.
I love Tulsi.
I'm going to go to the embodied person here.
Okay.
How do you feel when you have Tulsi?
When I take Tulsi, I feel like there is more space. I think, which is interesting, because when we talk about resilience, we use the word spaciousness a lot, because I feel like when we are in a state of non-resilience, and resilience really is a state, it's not like a place you go to and stay forever. It's a state that you come in and out of, and you can, you know, with the right tools, you can very easily go back to that state over and over again. And we use the word spaciousness a lot. And when I take Tulsi, I feel a sense of mental spaciousness, almost like nervous system spaciousness. Like it just feels as if the pressure and weight of time and pressure and daily life and all of the things, it's just slightly less. There's more space. And when there's more space, you can see more options. And when there's more space, you feel more capable. And I think that feeling of spaciousness also creates a sense of lightness or buoyancy in the heart that is, I would say, like akin to joy. Perhaps it definitely makes me feel a bit giddy. That's what I'm trying to say. Giddy and bubbly and happy.
Mm. Yeah, physiologically, Tulsi is specifically used for supporting heart health from a physiological thing. And again, heart health being so tied into inflammation. So there's kind of that double benefit there. not even double, but just who knows, multiple benefits.
That's also so fascinating, because if you've read any of the HeartMath Institute studies on the heart and how the actual health of the physical heart is tied into the health of the emotional heart and the state of heart coherence, which is expressed by or recognized by feelings of upliftment and joy. Mm. So that's also fascinating.
Oh, I love that so much, Bex. And then the cognitive stuff, Tulsi is specifically used for cognitive health too. And it's used a lot for somebody who wants to like kind of sharpen their function, someone who might feel like they're foggy headed, often used for when going through menopause and foggy headedness that comes with that. Tulsi can be combined with other herbs like bacopa and just kind of helping to support that cognitive health as well. My friend Christoph, Christoph Bernard, he loves Tulsi, and he describes it kind of similar, reminiscent of what you said, Bex, in that like he says when his mind gets really vata, or it's like just moving too fast and he's jumping from here to here to here, it's very grounding for him, and kind of that, which I think that to me recalls the spaciousness that you're talking about.
Yeah. I used to make a formula when I was in Chinese medical school and had a lot of studying to do. I used to take a combination of Tulsi and Gotu Kola, and it helped me focus so much. And as you know, and I will now tell everyone else, I have a mind that does not stay still very easily.
It wiggles
very, very easily, especially with the amount of Yorkshire Gold tea that I drink every morning. So having that combination just to sort of get me into a place where I could really focus was a game changer.
Yeah. And coming to mind too is another thing that when we think of like building resilience, it's very hard to build resilience if you're getting sick all the time, like respiratory infections, you know, like kind of like really contagious stuff. And Tulsi is really wonderful at modulating the immune system to help prevent sickness. And so, yeah, there's all these different ways you can build resilience, and definitely having a better forced field system and not letting contagions get in and cause sickness is a wonderful way to build resilience too. So yeah, Tulsi, there's so many wonderful things. It's so, I don't think we mentioned this, but so aromatic and lovely that it's easy to love too. You know, some herbs, like we love them despite the fact that they are bitter or, you know, difficult to take, but like, it's very easy to love.
It's Tulsi. So easy, it's to love.
So delicious.
And it is tasty and interesting in a way that makes it so easy to use creatively as well. Like when we were brainstorming ideas for this podcast, and we both use Tulsi a lot creatively anyway, but we're just sort of shooting ideas back and forth. And as we are prone to do when we get together to brainstorm something, all of a sudden the ideas got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until we're like, we have a whole book. We have a giant book here of just on Tulsi recipes that are creative and interesting, because it's so easy with that flavor once you know it to combine it with other things and use it in different directions. So I'm excited to share some of these recipes.
Yeah. All right. So let's share our creative Tulsi recipe brainstorm really quick. Just give me your favorite recipe that comes to mind.
My absolute all-time favorite Tulsi recipe is Tulsi and blackberry infused in maple syrup. I love it so much.
Okay. Will you walk me through this, because this is not something I've done before.
Okay, so you take maple syrup and you basically warm it up, and then you add, I'm sorry, this is a Rebecca style recipe, so
let's hear it. Yeah.
Big amount of maple syrup, and then you add a handful of Tulsi, and then a handful of frozen blackberries or fresh, but I feel like frozen somehow, like they release their juices more easily. Mm. And then like a glug of vanilla extract.
Ooh.
I would actually wait, leave the vanilla until you've strained everything, because it's expensive and you don't want to boil it off.
Sure.
But then you simmer that for about an hour until it's going to start smelling really, really good. And then strain out the blackberries and the Tulsi. And then you add a teaspoon or a glug of the vanilla extract. I never measure vanilla extract. I don't know.
Is that a thing or?
I know that there are often suggested, but I feel like vanilla extract is like garlic, and that whatever the suggestion is, nobody actually listens to anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, glug is an appropriate amount.
Glug. Good. Glad we're on the same page. Glug of vanilla extract, and then stir it all in, and it's exquisite. It's just, it's got, it's like tulsi and the tartness from the berries and the aromatics from the tulsi and then the vanilla and the sweetness from the syrup. And teas by the spoonful on ice cream, on like cut up some fruits and have it on fruits. But really in tea, it's incredible. In my other favorite recipe, actually, can I just go straight into that?
Well, I've never seen you eat pancakes, but I was just imagining like a lot of people might want it on pancakes. I could see drizzling over crepes or waffles. There's probably no wrong way to enjoy this. It sounds pretty amazing.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. Yes, I've never had a waffle, which I feel is a... Oh, I've had a waffle at your house.
Okay.
You were my first waffle experience.
Okay, that would just be a wrong. I don't remember because I don't have a good memory for these things, but I'm glad that we rectified that.
I've had Rosalie's waffles, but yes, it's so delicious. And Lovely. Yes, I could imagine on pancakes or waffles.
Yeah. As an aside, I interviewed Lucretia and that was her recipe, where she actually put tulsi in pancake batter, which we do it in waffles. Oh, but yeah, it's so good. Anyway, that's another creative way to work with tulsi. I never would have imagined that, like putting tulsi fresh or dried into a pancake batter, but it's so good.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing. But I would just like to sort of to go back to the reason that we're doing this creative recipes is that having a jar of delicious tulsi syrup in the fridge that you just add to things, it is so pleasurable that it becomes so easy to do, which I know that you have spoken to somebody who has drunk an infusion every day for 25 years. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time after I don't remember how long I lasted with my last nettle infusion experiment. I think I lasted 5 days. Pretty good for me. Mm-hmm. But I saw your face. You're like, actually. But having something in the fridge that's delicious is so easy that you end up having it every day just because you want to taste it. You start to you wake up in the morning. Well, speak for myself. I wake up in the morning. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to have my shatavari ghee on toast. I can't wait to have my shatavari ghee stirred into my dandy blend this afternoon. I can't wait to have my tulsi syrup in my mint tea before bed. Like it's so delicious and pleasurable. And I think it sort of ties into that feeling that we talked about before of why we became herbalists, which is the relationship and the feeling of just having this, you know, a fridge full or a cupboard full of delicious things to use. It's just so easy to use that it sort of makes you not need to force yourself to establish this, you know, new morning routine or this new something routine that.
And it's like when you're talking about that, I'm just like getting the sense of like joy and pleasure. And the more joy and pleasure we bring into our lives, the more joy and pleasure we get in our lives. Like that, again, that snowball rolling down a hill, it builds on itself. And what a beautiful way to do that. Okay, next up, I want to hear another one, another recipe.
So my favorite tea to put the tulsi and blackberry syrup in is a combination of tulsi with Lapsang Souchong tea, the smokiness of the black tea. Plus, I just love black tea. But tulsi with that, with a bit of vanilla powder.
I love that this is a favorite of yours. I didn't know this before we started talking about this, but I don't know if you saw Bex, but like a while ago, I was moving too fast in the morning and I was making Xavier his tulsi tea and I was making me my black tea. And I'm very particular about just the way the black tea needs to be. And I accidentally put his tulsi tea on top of my black tea. And I was like, I mean, it was just this existential crisis. Do I like throw out this tea and ruin it, like, and waste it. Like, that doesn't feel good. But like, I only like tea in a particular way in the morning, but I just sucked it up and did it. I was like, okay, fine. I'll just have this. And it was amazing. It was so good. It's my new favorite tea to put Tulsi in black tea now. It wasn't, you know, it was just together. Yeah, it was just a, you know, Assam black tea, not the Lapsang Souchong, but that also sounds really good. So, but anyway, it's just kind of funny that I like stumbled across this by making a quote mistake, but you're like, no, I'm into it. It's my favorite. I mean,
it's brilliant though. It's a brilliant mistake. I too am very particular, as you know, about the way that black tea is prepared.
Yeah, we're very particular in very different ways. We're both black tea drinkers with opinions.
Very strong opinions.
Right, well, that's easy enough, making Lapsang Souchong or black tea with Tulsi. Love it. Yeah.
And then it's there. And it is, if you can tolerate caffeine in the afternoon, it's just I love it as a early afternoon thing with a bit of the syrup and a bit of milk. Mm. It's lovely. So pleasing.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, the recipe that just popped into my mind is Tulsi pesto. Mm. And so this is like just making a pesto like you would with your basil or whatever, but using Tulsi. And the first time someone mentioned this, I did not think that that was a good idea because Tulsi is aromatic in a particular way. I just thought like, this won't be good. I was kind of like, people might be trying too hard with this recipe because that's just not the way to do it. And then my friend Leslie Likos brought Tulsi pesto and she came to visit me one time and instant convert, like, oh my gosh, it is so incredible. And what a way to like get a really good amount of Tulsi into your life because you're like literally having it by like the chipful or whatever is going on. So yeah, it's so delicious. Of course, you have to grow Tulsi in order to do that. And again, it's pretty easy if you do have a garden to grow it. A lot of our recipes, we're going to talk, you know, you can use both fresh or dried, but this one is like fresh only. I think reconstituting the Tulsi, it would have a weird, weird flavor. Wouldn't be good. But yeah, the Tulsi pesto. And it doesn't even have to be straight up Tulsi. You could use Tulsi in other things. You can add smaller amounts of Tulsi. You can make a Tulsi netto pesto. I mean, there's so many different options here. I'm a big fan of I really love pestos and I really love hummus. I love combining the two of them because it's just so fun to have that like afternoon snack that's just so lovely. Or what I end up doing is taking it to the lake a lot. So then we're like compounding benefits here of being outside, enjoying that, having yummy things to eat. Then you bring the cool thing to all your friends and you look really cool. So there's a lot of like big benefits here with the Tulsi.
That's amazing. Pesto. I'm going to try that this summer. This is my first year, or last year was the first year I realized I can actually grow Tulsi. My front garden gets so hot and Tulsi just absolutely thrives. So I am planning this year on growing a lot of Tulsi and
I'm excited to see that. You know, last year I was in Austin and I got to tour the American Botanical Council's gardens, which was amazing, with Gail and Jesus, and their Tulsi was so huge. And I'm like, my Tulsi, like I thought I was doing pretty good with my like pretty compact Tulsi, but it was humongous. So I'm excited like to see if you can grow it to that size just because, you know, it just really loves the heat and the longer growing season and stuff. So yeah, we do have a recipe that we want to share, like an actual recipe with suggested measurements. And this is, I wrote it. This is one of my favorite ways to enjoy Tulsi because I am such a huge fan of oxymels and shrubs, which are basically a vinegar honey extraction of various herbs and fruits. And I make a zillion different combinations and ways. So the suggested recipe is just like giving you an idea of what to do. But it's very, you can change things so much. So this one has Tulsi in it. You can use fresh or dried Tulsi. It has hibiscus in it and dandelion. Dandelion root being really high in minerals, and the vinegar extracts the minerals really well. So it's really well, does really well for that. You could add hawthorn to this. You could add rose to this. Like there's so many different ways to work with it. But basically you're putting all of your chosen ingredients in the jar with the honey, with the vinegar. And I'll give you recommendations on that. And then you put a glass or plastic lid on top of it, shake it up, let it sit for about 2 weeks. Then you strain that off. And then you have this tart, tangy, sweet thing that there's so many ways to enjoy it. You could take it by the spoonful. I don't, but you could take it by the spoonful for sure. My favorite way is to put it in sparkling water. That is my absolute favorite. It just, then you have this like instant mocktail that's just like so tart. It's very cooling and very refreshing. So during the summer months, if you're like getting overheated or just, you know, want something relaxing to calm down with, this is like the perfect drink. You can mix it into cocktails too. So you can like, if you do alcohol, you can do that. It also makes a really good salad dressing or any kind of, you know, for like your salad, for your carrots. It could be a marinade. Really great marinade too. So yeah, another one of those things you can make it up. I make like literally gallons of shrubs and oxymels every year, and I just have that sitting around so I can just easily grab it for a quick marinade, quick tea or sparkling water drink, etc. So yummy. And you can visit the show notes to get that exact recipe that you can play around with. And I want to hear from people what they think about it, because it is one of my favorite ways to have Tulsi. Do you have another favorite way?
Oh, Tulsi frosting. And Tulsi frosting. Yeah. So you can make like a very strong Tulsi tea and strain it, and then use that in, I was about to say icing sugar. I think in the US it's powdered sugar or icing sugar. About a teaspoon per 3/4 cup of icing sugar roundabout. And I keep doing, I'm making a stirring motion.
Thank you for showing us how.
You're very welcome. I can't help it. I bake so much. I'm like, it's like puzzle. Demo.
Bex thinks she's on the.
And here's one I made earlier. Yeah. It's delicious. It's the combination of Tulsi and frosting, and I love it on a very simple sponge cake with blackberries, because I think it's apparent now that I love the combination of Tulsi and blackberry together. But yes, a vanilla pound cake with blackberries through it, or if you're feeling creative, then like an almond sponge with vanilla and blackberries through it, because the almonds get quite dense and it's like, it gives it a really lovely dense texture. But then with a Tulsi frosting, you could also mix some blackberry juice in with that, and then you'd have a lovely purple and slightly tart berry flavor with the Tulsi in the frosting. But it's just, it's a hint, and it's so delicious.
Why do you live so far away from me again? That
It's a cruel thing. Unfair. But next time I come and visit, I'll bring you a cake.
Deal. Okay. So it has been so much fun having you on for the past couple of weeks. And it's been fun talking about resilience. It's been fun talking about all of our different herbs. I love the idea from today of like, how can we joyfully bring herbs into our life? That's something we look forward to. It's not something that's like just on our to-do list or feels like a should, but rather something that we're like just truly like excited and joyful. And then also this kind of wonderful sensual pleasure that we're getting from things like the maple syrup Tulsi or just a simple cup of tea. That in itself is just, yeah, a wonderful way to build resilience, just to take time to connect with yourself as you're enjoying these things that taste so lovely and are helping to build your resilience. Because again, you know, part of the discussion around building resilience these days, like if you walk into the health food store, it's like literally how many hundreds of dollars can you spend on supplements that you just swallow, and like then that's it, right? So it's like, that's one idea, is you just take a whole bunch of adaptogens, a whole bunch of expensive things. Or there's kind of this idea that you could like magically erase the stress from your life, like, oh, like if only I had more bandwidth, if only I didn't have this or that. And while we definitely think that simplifying your life is a good thing, you never want a life free of stress. Like stress is actually a good thing to a certain point. Chronic overwhelming stress, bad. But we need stressors in our life, because that actually does build resilience, as long as we have that relationship in a good way, right? As long as it's not that overwhelming sense of doom, weight on shoulders kind of stress, but like, yeah, like I got this kind of stress. So we don't want to magically create a life without stress. Plus it's just not possible. Like I know it's so easy to feel like, oh, I just wish I could be on vacation all the time, right? Not just a week out of my life or 2 weeks out of my life, or if you live in Europe, 6 weeks out of your life. But the idea though is like, how do we bring that sense of ease and spaciousness and capacity that you might feel when taking like time out of your life? How do we infuse that back into your life? And that's something that is so critical to building resilience, and something that we really look into a lot with building resilience is how to create that transformation. Because ultimately, we're wanting to develop this relationship with herbs in a way that's like building and joyful and lovely, and as well as transforming your relationship to stress. And so, yeah, it's kind of like you were talking about earlier, Bex, is like this multifaceted approach. It can't just be like one thing, but like, how do we put that together? And that's what building resilience is. It's a learning about who you are as a unique person, and then how to create that relationship with stress and overwhelm, that it's not a feeling of being weighed down and no bandwidth, no capacity, but ease and capacity and spaciousness. And yeah, building resilience is enrolling this week for this year. That's it. So if you're interested, be sure to check out the show notes to get the link to go check it out. What would you add to that, Bex?
I would add that I have never seen anybody else approach this topic in the way we do. Because not just because we're combining practices with taking herbs, but because of the thing I mentioned earlier about changing the operating system. And I think that so much of what I see out there in the world is it comes from that place of like pushing and forcing and you know, here's your new morning routine type stuff. Or like you said, taking things away, or taking handfuls of supplements, or the magic hack. And I really think that the way we approach this is so unique and beautiful, in part because of our relationship to plants and the earth and how we see things grow and plants grow and how we see relationships develop and how we see herbs affect people's bodies and the relationship affect people and our lives. It has really almost directly influenced the way that we have approached teaching this course as well, in a way that feels sort of generative and nutritive and spacious and kind, but also deeply transformative. Like I don't want it to feel like when I think we both use the words spacious and gentle and ease filled and calm often when talking about this, but that doesn't mean weak. It's like saying, you know, milky oat is gentle, but is it weak?
No.
Nettle is gentle. Is it weak? And so, yes, it's a sort of direct reflection of our relationship with plants is then taken further into being about plants, but also about practices and our relationship with who we are and our relationship with the world outside us. And it's really addressing changing some of the programs we have running in our brains, but in a way that is kind, simple, very impactful. I've never seen it anywhere else. And I really do hope that if what we have said about resilience and stress speaks to you, and it does feel like something you want to change in your life, I really do hope that you can join us, because it is going to be a truly amazing and transformative and life-changing experience.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. The invitation to join us on this. And, you know, as you're talking about unique ways that we are presenting this, I think a big one, and that's something I've really grown and learned with you, is that, you know, we joke a lot of like, you and I are so different, because we are like, that's one of our things. We're like twins opposites. Like, we're so similar, but like in opposite ways. And it took me a while, like in my young herbal days, I just kind of thought like everybody was the same. Like everybody should, like, if 10 people are dealing with stress and overwhelm, then there's one way for those 10 people to deal with that stress and overwhelm. And that is something that we definitely debunk in building resilience. It's really getting to know who you are. And we live, without getting in it too deeply, we live in a culture that kind of really prefers one personality type. And we get a lot of cultural messages to be like this one personality type. And a lot of those hacks and that kind of stuff is like speaking to that, but we're really opening things up so you get to know who you are uniquely, and so that you can create this roadmap to building resilience that works for you. So this course is not about Bex and I telling you what to do. It's more about us being a guide for you to help figure out, you know, what is that relationship going to look like for you? So we're not dictating the relationship. We're not saying what it should look like. We're saying, here's the invitation and the road to figuring out how that works for you.
That was beautifully said.
Thanks. Glad we love each other so much.
I know we do.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us for these couple of podcasts about building resilience. And as Bex so beautifully said, if you feel called to this, if you're thinking like in 4 months, you want to be in a different place than you are now, that you want a different relationship with stress, that you're tired of responding to, you know, everything like, I'm so busy, I'm so stressed, I'm so overwhelmed, you want a different way of being in the world, then building resilience is your roadmap to that. And we would love to have you join us. So again, you can join, get all the details by using the link in the show notes. And Bex, thanks again for being here. It's really fun having someone I so deeply respect on the show, but someone I so deeply love and know too. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Don't forget to head over to the show notes at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com to download your beautifully illustrated recipe card and to get a transcript of this show. There, you'll also be able to sign up for my weekly newsletter, which is the best way to stay in touch with me. And you can visit more of Rebecca's offerings at wonderbotanica.com. If you'd like more herbal episodes to come your way, then one of the best ways to support this podcast is by subscribing on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. I deeply believe that this world needs more herbalists and plant-centered folks, and I'm so glad that you're here as part of this herbal community. Also, a big round of thanks to the people all over the world who make this podcast happen week to week. Nicole Paul is the project manager who oversees the whole operation, from guest outreach to writing show notes to actually uploading each episode and so many other things I don't even know. She really holds this whole thing together. Francesca is our fabulous video and audio editor. She not only makes listening more pleasant, she also adds beauty to the YouTube videos with plant images and video overlays. Tatiana Rusikova is the botanical illustrator who creates gorgeous plant and recipe illustrations for us. I love them. I know that you do too. Christy edits the recipe cards, and then Jenny creates them as well as the thumbnail images for YouTube. Michelle is the tech wizard behind the scenes, and Karen is our student services coordinator and customer support. For those of you who like to read along, Jennifer is who creates the transcripts each week. Xavier, my handsome French husband, is the cameraman and website IT guy. Thanks to Rising Appalachia for their beautiful song, Resilience. Find more of their music at risingappalachia.com. It takes an herbal village to make it all happen, including you. Okay, you've lasted to the very end of the show, which means you get a gold star and this herbal tidbit. Well, after sharing all of those fun recipes with Tulsi, I realized I forgot to share one of my favorite ways to work with Tulsi, and it's also one of the most simplest. This is simply a cold infusion of the fresh leaves and flowers. You could possibly use the dried leaves and flowers for this too. It will probably work to some extent, but the fresh is really great for this. So Tulsi, like culinary basil, really thrives when you consistently pinch off the young flowering tops. This helps the plant to produce stronger stems that are bushier and just filled with a lot more leaves. So I begin pinching the top of my plants as soon as they start to flower. Even if they're really young and small, you want to do this. I then take those little tops and chop them up and put them in a canning jar. You can use any amount here, really. I kind of use like a small handful. In the beginning of the season, maybe I don't have that much, and so I'm using even less. But basically, the more you use, the stronger the taste will be, the less, etc. But you want just basically a small handful to, say, a liter, a quart of water. So I put all those fresh chopped tops into a glass jar. Then I fill that with water, and I cover it, and then put it in the fridge. This is going to be ready Well, it'll be aromatic in about 30 minutes or so, so you could have it pretty immediately, but I kind of like to let it steep for a couple of hours to really get those aromatics out. Then I strain it off and enjoy this refreshing herbal water. You can, I know this will be a question, you can immediately reinfuse those herbs again if you'd like, so you could do it a couple of times, but I wouldn't use the same fresh herbs for more than 24 hours because you're just kind of risking some bacterial growth there. But this aromatic herbal water is a bit demulcent and it's just so delicious. Like, it has a very fresh taste to it and it's really perfect on a hot summer's day. And by the way, you can do this with any fresh aromatic herb. So your mints will be great for this. Lemon balm is wonderful for this. Anise hyssop is so delicious as well. So if you're growing fresh aromatic herbs, even your culinary herbs, rosemary, oregano, thyme, all of those, this is a really yummy way to enjoy it. As a last reminder, the Building Resilience course does close on April 10th. You can get all the details as well as sign up through the link in the show notes. And we're excited to welcome you into this transformative course. And I'll leave you with the grateful words of Monica, one of our previous Building Resilience students. She writes, "I'm grateful to have had the gift of this course. I'm grateful to have knowledge that I would have taken a long time to discover on my own. I'm grateful for the intelligence, compassion, humor, and willingness of Rebecca and Rosalie to guide me into making practical changes in my life, which support my resilience." Beautiful. We are grateful to have Monica in class. All right, so again, you can get the link through the show notes, and there you can get all the details on the Building Resilience course, as well as sign up. We'll see you there.